Accession number 7194, Reel 1.
Mr. Watson, Reel 1. Where were you born, Mr. Watson?
In London, Cumberland Market.
Which year was that?
1922.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a textile buyer.
Where did you go to school?
In Albany Street.
And how old were you when you left?
14.
To do what?
I went and worked for a firm in Berners Street. I think they called themselves Hairdressers Sundersman.
So what were you doing?
Oh, just a boy, and he's just sweeping up, just general.
How did you come to be in the TA then?
I had two brothers that had previously been in the battalion.
What did your TA work involve?
I joined with a force age. I joined at 14 and a quarter, and I had two brothers who previously, it sounds such a long while ago, two brothers who were in the horse transport section. And I, too, wanted to ride horses and went in to the horse transport section. And shortly after I joined, a boy got killed, was killed by a horse, and all the boys were transferred out the horse transport section into the band, and I went into the band.
Did you get much actual military training in the TA?
Yes, a bit, but not so much, because one did all the obvious things, the rifle training, yes, within the limitations. It wasn't strenuous to what was one night a week or two nights a week, I can't remember, an annual camp, an Easter camp, and weekends away, as far as this is concerned, to Perth Right or to Perth Fleet for range work, as far as this.
Now, can we go on to the outbreak of war?
Yeah.
And can you tell me what you recollect of people's reaction when the announcement came that we were at war with Germany?
I can remember very well, actually, that I was already called up by then, and I was stationed at Stanhope Street School, and it's off Hampstead Road, and I was in the pub. It's called the Cock, and it's there in the corner of Seaton Street, which we were standing in the saloon bar with our guns, and the radio was switched on, and Chamberlain who came over, and I really wasn't really afraid. I think one found it a bit amusing that this was actually happening. One had been called up, and something was happening. We'd already been called up 3 or 4 weeks by then. This was something that was happening and kind of thing. But one wasn't really worried. It was something was going to happen. I think it was a plus factor rather than a minus factor.
Do you think people seemed pleased that we were at war?
Not pleased. I think the average blokes I knew, they really didn't know what it was all about. In retrospect, you know, that it was something that was going to happen. It was all, at that stage, very much a game. I don't think really the average person really knew what war meant. I mean, this was, instead of going away a camp and coming home after 2 weeks, you were there for, and you were going to be there for a long while. That's all. I don't think that people were really worried.
Did you come across anybody who was against the war declaration?
No.
Now, can we go on to May 1940, and can you tell me how you got the news that you were going to France?
Yes, I remember very well, actually. As I said, I was in the band. I was actually a bugler, and when the band was disbanded, because practically all the members of the band were very old. And it was just that the buglers were young. And so really, we didn't have a band as such. We just had a bugle band. And then when we were sort of things started warming up a bit, the buglers were split up and transferred around the companies. They'd all been in headquarter company, and I was transferred to C company. And the dispatch rider, all the buglers had been dispatch riders. And so I split from my friends, and I really wasn't happy about this, being in C company, which was considered much better and rank above to be in headquarter company. And I was at Kennington, near Ashford in Kent. And it was all, it was very pleasant. It was April, May, the weather was very lovely and it was all very nice. We'd been rushing around on lots of scares. And we'd been scared many times of, well, I'm dressed, this is going to happen, that, but it didn't happen, never did. And parachutists were always coming down, which didn't come down. And then I can't remember, it was after 12 o'clock at night that we were going to move. Just that, we were going to move, and we were going overseas. And I can vividly remember that there were really, panic broke out as far as fellas running round to phone home to their wives and to their mothers and to tell them they were going, going overseas and what have you. And one had to pack up. We were leaving, we were a motorcycle battalion. We were going to leave all our equipment, all our motorcycles and everything behind. We were going as an infantry battalion. And everybody was throwing stuff away and packing their rucksacks to take what they could and what have you. And I was like a ferret. I was running around picking up all the things that everybody was throwing away. And then you could have breakfast. The cooks had made up whatever they had, and you could help yourself. And there was tins of peaches and loads and loads of food, and you could take whatever. And I packed my rucksack cram full of food, and I had a Dixie full of cold sausages, and then people had parcels from home of food and cakes, and I took cakes and chocolate, and I was really loaded with food, and I was quite convinced that this was a hoax, that it really was just another test to see how quick we could get away. We drove our vehicles to Ashford Station and went on the train. And then we left the vehicle and the train went away. And very crowded on the train. And really was quite funny. Everybody thought it was a joke. And I must think the minority thought it was a hoax, so that it was just an exercise. We went and then we fell asleep probably on the train. And I vividly remember waking up. It was light by this time. And as the train was coming along, that we saw on the left the White Cliffs of Dover. And then, people were looking out the windows of the train. Oh, look, this is Dover. We must be going overseas. And I was still convinced that that this was a hoax. We were only taking it. And I was certainly the youngest one, was assuring everybody else not to worry. Everything was all right. We're not going. This is only a test case. Don't worry. Anyway, they took the trains right down to the docks, and there were boats there. And I was still convinced that this was an exercise. And they were then started marching them onto these boats, big paddle steamers, marching them onto these boats. And I was bursting to go to the toilet. And I was loaded up with all this stuff. Oh, and they'd given me a Bren tripod to carry as well. So I had this Bren tripod packed on top of this rucksack. My knees were buckling under this weight I was carrying. I went to the toilet at the Dover, I suppose Dover Marine, and went down, I was such a long toilet, passing water, it was such a long toilet, and it never seemed to stop, and suddenly I looked round, and I realised there was nobody else in the toilet, I was alone in the toilet, and I finished, and I must get a move on, I actually run out the toilet to get back, and standing on the door of the toilet was the military policeman, and who got hold of my arm and gave me a little bit of a push along, and he asked me whether he thought I was trying to miss the boat. And he said, because they're just going. And I run, and they were just moving the gangplank. And I run up the gangplank to get on this boat, and I was the last one. I think I was one of the last to get onto this boat. All the battalion, the 1st Battalion Queen Victoria, were on this boat, that's all. And the anchors away type thing, and the boat starts pulling out of Dover Harbour. And the battalion was together again for the first time for many months. And so one had the opportunity to meet friends that I'd not seen for many months. And they were, it was like an old boys' reunion. You were meeting fellas, and oh, here's Ronnie, and you were meeting together. And as I said, I'd come from headquarter company, and I then immediately went to headquarter company and met up with people that I knew, and other buglers and fellas from the battalion there, and the signals section. This fella Nick Day was one of them. Was rigged up some equipment on the deck of the boat, some signal lamps, and were working away, very, very busy. Everybody else was strolling around, and this was activity was going on of rigging this signal equipment up, and the boat was just going out very leisurely out of Dover Harbour. I was still convinced that they were going to take us out and bring us back again. And we were laughing and joking, this fella Day and another fella, Corporal West, was started flashing away with this signal lamp up to the top of the cliffs of Dover. There's a radio station thing up there, and lights were flashing back from there to the boat. And I said to this fella Day, I said, what are they doing? So he said, he's sending us a message. So I said, but what's he saying? So he said, he's wishing us good luck and hope you come back soon. So I said, what are you saying? So he said, well, I'm thanking him very much. I said, we're not going, are we? So he said, oh, yes. And that was the first time that I realised. And I vividly remember, because it's still a joke. And I said, but I can't, I haven't told my mum. And the question is, here it was, it was gone. And then I changed. And it was all quite different then. Oh, hell, you know, really, this is the real thing. It isn't an exercise. And I went and stood at the edge of the boat and started thinking, because it was going on. Hell, what am I going to do, you know? I was a bugler. That I had a gun with a Bren Trub. And a bugle as well. We had silver bugles. And I thought to myself, you know, the best thing I could, hell, what am I going to do with this bugle? Suppose they ask me to play it over there, or blow it, and there's Germans there, they hear me, they shoot me. And I threw the bugle in the sea. I took it off and threw it in the channel. And I didn't want to be asked to blow this bugle over there, for fear of attracting attention. So I thought, then I don't want a bugle. And the bugle went overboard. We started, I don't know how far it is, but I didn't say only an hour and a half anyway, so it probably took longer than an hour and a half with a paddle boat. But as we got out the harbour, then we were picked up by naval boats. I don't know what you call them, destroyers, but sort of whatever. And they sort of surrounded us. And there was another boat with us, which, if I remember correctly, was the 3rd Battalion Royal Tank Regiment. And this was on the side, so it was just the two of us. Might have been three, but anyway, but the Royal Tank Regiment, they had actually had tanks, like small tanks, I don't know what, and they were not out.
Which tank?
3rd Battalion Royal Tank Regiment.
What type of tanks did they
have? Small things, not big, but they actually had tanks, real. And we strike out, and we were surrounded by these naval boats. And then, I thought, oh, this is real, and I suppose it was about halfway across, then German planes started coming over. And I'd never seen a German plane before. They started dive bombing us. And then at first, I really couldn't believe that it was real. And then I remember seeing bombs drop. Everyone was standing watching these things. I don't know really whether they were going for us or for these naval boats, but they were a goodly way from us out, these naval boats. And to see these shells drop in the sea and bloody great splashes of water go up. I mean, I think I did it in my trousers. I don't know. I didn't, but one felt like doing it. And of course, then I had sort of quick consultation. All the bugler boys got together. What the hell are we on type thing? We had almost like a union meeting. It wasn't a sort of revolt, but we had to work out something. You know, what the hell was it? The colonel, so we had, you know, words going on, was having a meeting. And the company commanders to work out what was going on, and then As we didn't have, we'd left all our vehicles behind, and I was a dispatch rider, then I became a runner, back to 40 years. So I was then called, and then I had to run to the first class mess. All the company runners were lined up outside the first class saloon, and the meeting broke, and the company commanders came out, and this fellow, his name was Major Brown, then gave me instructions, and I had to run all round the boat and summon the platoon commanders to come for his briefing. And then I run round and found the various company commanders and brought them to Major Brown, and there was me hanging round the side. What could I hear as far as this concerned? And of course, naturally, I shouldn't have been there, but I was hanging round, and it was decided, it had been decided. The story went something like this. I think that the we were going to Cali. To that point, this was the first time we knew we were going to Cali. It was in flames. The Germans were there. A C company were going to land first. And the platoon which I was attached to was going to be the first platoon off the boat. I thought, bloody hell. The questions that to be transferred from head to headquarters, the C company was bad enough, but to be in the platoon was going, okay, fair enough, that we had to go. So by time went on, and we're coming closely, one saw a land, one coming down, and sure enough, there was big piles of smoke coming up and what have you. And the naval blokes, they didn't come with us, they stayed outside, and just this silly little paddle steamer goes in, and the Royal Tank Regiment waited outside as well, surrounded by the naval boats. And we went in very slowly, very gingerly. You know, I don't know. Yes, I expected, wasn't expected to see all Germans standing in the dock type thing, but one didn't see any German. And I'd never been to France before, and this is my first visit to France. And I was really, remember, there weren't many people about either, and to see these Frenchmen with these big berries on. You know, it's just strange, and nobody wanted to help you, and you had to get gang. And a couple of Frenchmen did get gangplanks out, and managed to sort of get them onto the boat. And the boat came in, and we've all been lined up. This platoon, we'd all put our rucksacks on by this time, and I had this Bren tripod on as well. And we'd all been instructed where we were going. We came into the siding, and there were some railway sidings, and the railway carriages. Goods wagons were laying on the side, and we had to sling a half circle around the boat for the rest of the battalion to come off to protective cover. And we were instructed beforehand where we were going, so we had to get on the other side of these railway wagons to lay down to put cover out. And I remember going down this boat, down this gangplank, and then run. And one had to get on the other side of these railway wagons, and they, the doors open in the middle, the sliding doors. And I used to think I was very fit, and I played a lot of sport, and so I just flew at this wagon, obviously forgotten that I got a Bren tripod and cans of sausages and tins of peaches and pears and chocolate. And I didn't make it. You know, I didn't make it into the pepper side, and I hit my shins right on the edge of this wagon. And I flattened my face. I got up and I ran on and got down, and my legs felt all cold. I thought I'd been shot, and I lay down. And I felt I had all blood coming down my legs, and I cut my shins as it hit on there. And I felt awful. Anyway, it was very quickly over. Of course, there were no Germans there, and waited for a while, and we filmed this circle. And then the rest of the battalion came off, and they went in front of us and formed a bigger circle in the town, so we were told. So then we went, this C company then went into reserve, and we stood back at the docks while the rest of the battalion went forward and formed a larger circle for the Royal Tank Regiment to come off and unload their equipment so they could go forward with and form this outer protective circle. With our battalion, and then one was then, after helping the Royal Tank Regiment, we were taken along by the dunes to, we were sort of, one might say, put in reserve. I just held there, if that's the phrase now. And again, it's all impressions. And we went there, and there were big guns, big French guns there. I'd never seen just big guns. reinforced in placements there. We went, but there were no French. There were no French at all. I remember going, and they said, well, are you resting here? They were reinforced concrete. And I could vividly remember going into these things. And the smell, sort of perfume. I'd never smelled expensive perfume. Well, probably it wasn't expensive, but it was perfume. And Goldwire cigarettes. They've stayed with me for the rest of my life. It's the smell of Goldwire cigarettes and stale perfume. And I'd never seen anything like that. There were bunk beds, very crowded. And there were pictures of nude women all over the world. I'd never seen this before. I remember the other fellows hadn't. We were going round, looking at these. We were fascinated by this. You know, of course, no French was this in. And by which time, the Germans started throwing rubbish over. And it was big stuff was landing. Oh, and the floor was boom. This I'd never met before.
And was this the first time they'd opened fire?
This the first time the Germans opened fire. And the floor was really shaking. I'd never, and the concrete walls were moving. I didn't understand this. This is, I didn't like at all. Standing in the doorway, peeking out. I didn't want to see anything, but I suppose one felt, didn't like being in the bunker, one felt one that had a bit of light. And I vividly remember the fellow, I didn't know who he was at the time, but I later learned this was this fellow, Brigadier Nicholson, who was the brigadier in charge of this brigade. And he came walking along, and he was quite a chap, and everybody else had their helmets, but he had a soft hat on. He walked along with his stick and his hat, and he had a very tall fellow, very good stride, and he walked along, and he was talking to fellows, and he was very good, and very friendly, and really good comms man. I remember him coming up to me and speaking to me, and said, he asked me if I was all right. So I said, oh yes, and so I told him I didn't like those things. I told him I didn't like them. So, and he told me, I remember, he said, then you mustn't worry about those. He said, because if you hear them, he said, then you're safe. He said, when you don't hear them, he said, then you've got trouble. He said, so you needn't worry. He said, if you're going to get hurt, he said, you're not going to hear it anyway. And I can vividly remember that I honestly felt better after that. I really felt better that if I've heard it, then it's gone. Well, that's great. And the question, so I'm not going to know it. And then I was prepared to accept this, and it did me a power of good. Excuse me, I can't remember the... I can't remember the exact order of events, but I make the best effort I can to bring them into the correct sequence. After we'd been in these bunkers for some hours, or half a day, then the Weema moved out again. And taken out to on the line with the other fellows from the battalion. And I remember we were being marched forward. We were then going to the outside of the town, which was on the outer perimeter. This was probably a day after we'd been there. And as we were going along, walking along the road, I remember seeing English tanks blown up, but really blown to pieces. And I couldn't believe it. These lovely English tanks. We'd all been told that the Germans only had carport tanks. And I couldn't believe that they could do this to us. Be this it may, everywhere, where I think within, I'm not sure, but somehow within a couple of days that all the English tanks had been taken right out of action, and the Royal Tank Regiment, what was left of them, were fighting as an infantry battalion. We went out, we were taken out on the outskirts of the town, and on this perimeter. And we found or stolen a lorry. We had a lorry. And we got out there, and we had to go on the side of a road, in a ditch on the side of the road. They strung this platoon out right along the road, on the edge of the road in a ditch. And the officer in charge of it was a fellow I remember very well, a fellow called Captain Banbury, who I knew very well, had lots of dealings with him before. He was a battalion weapon training officer, and I'd done a lot of work with him before. I'd been away on courses and whatever, and I was quite a proficient shot. As I was a young boy, I had cross guns, I'd done Bren work, and more than lots of other fellas in the battalion. And I'd actually been on a course with a Piat anti-tank gun, and so I knew the man Banbury very well. And so I stayed with Captain Banbury, or he wanted me to stay with him. And all these fellas came off, and Banbury lined all these fellas up along the lane. Why, you're staying here. And on the other side of the road, we were covering a battery of Royal Artillery anti-aircraft who were being evacuated. They're on the other side of the road, these big guns, anti-aircraft guns. And we were there. Once we were there, they were leaving. And they spiked these guns, blew the guns up, and they were going away in their wagons. And just as they were leaving, I remember about four of these fellows jumped off a lorry, one of the lorries which was leaving, and came over to Banbury, who was laying next to me, Captain Banbury, and asked him if they could stay with him. They told him they were fed up, they'd been running enough, they wanted to stay and do some fighting. So he said, it's up to you. If you want to stay, I'm pleased to have you. But he said, if I was you, you can get back on your own. They said, no, we won't. He said, then bring your guns. And they brought their guns, and they laid down with us, and put them along the line, and the wagons, Royal Artillery, went away, where to, I don't know, in the hope of being evacuated. I don't know how long we laid there. Huh? And looking across a cornfield, and a road was coming at right angles on the other side, quite a large cornfield. May, so the corn obviously wasn't very high, but we could see across this field. And then we started seeing some German tanks coming down the road, and they were coming not at us, but across us. And they seemed so big to me. Much bigger than the ones that the British had brought over. These are big things. And one's seen it many times since, but this was the first time I'd ever seen it. There's these big tanks were coming along. There were German soldiers walking behind them. And the Banbury passed the word down the line that nobody must fire. Everybody must hold your fire, that he gives instructions to fire. And they came right across our line, and quite close, I don't know, 200 yards, probably less, 100 to 200 yards, and come right. So they're all fully exposed, all these soldiers just creeping behind, marching behind these tanks, until when he goes, then we open fire on these, but the soldiers, not the tanks, no? And I think, a lot of them were knocked out. And of course, then the top tanks stopped in their tracks and pulled back a bit, and then you could see that the turrets just swing round, and then we stopped firing. And then they opened on us, and they got very quick, and lots of rubbish. Fortunately, we had a good cover, because we were in this ditch with hedgerow, and we were going through a hedgerow, so they couldn't have seen us. I don't think so. And then we started getting some fire back, and we exchanged fire. This went on for a while, and it started getting hot, you know? And so this Captain Bambi said, then we must leave. And he told the fellow to go and get the lorry ready. Start the lorry. Because this was undercover, hidden, that couldn't be seen. And one fella ran away and started the engine's going, and he said, right, one at a time, onto the lorry. And this Captain Bambi was the nearest person to the lorry. And idiot that I am, I thought that he would be the first one on the lorry, and I was next to him, that I would be next. And so I went to go for the lorry, and he said, oh no, he said, no, we start from the other end first. So the farthest person from the lorry was the first one on. So the first one run down, and then next. And so it turned out that I was the last but one to get on the lorry, by which time it was already moving. And the lorry had one of these camouflage netting over, and it was really moving. This fellow was getting a bit of a move on by this time. And I ran and jumped on the back of the lorry. I didn't have my Bren tripod this time. And this camouflage netting caught on the back of my rucksack, And the fellas were trying to pull me. I was dangling off the back, and they grabbed my trousers and just pulled me on. I managed to get on as the fellow went very fast and drove away, and we were driving back into Cali. As we were getting, of course, there was lots of rubbish going on there, throwing about, and we came. There was a bridge was mined, and it's not a bridge mined, and everyone said, "Slow down, slow down." And there were military police there, slowing the lorry down. He went across the bridge, and we'd not been no sooner over than the bridge was blown up.